Hello, everyone, and welcome to Blog Red Machines podcast for this month. My name is Stephen Bloom. I am the senior editor of Blog Red Machine. Take a moment here, cover a couple of things. We'll take a brief glimpse back at yesterday's opening day 4-0 win over the Miami Marlins. Take a little bit more of a look at opening day and how it is being perceived. And then the main reason for this podcast is the introduction revelation of your choices for the All-National League Central team. If you were down at the ballpark, Great American yesterday, Great American Ballpark set a record for the largest crowd in its history, 42,956. Largest crowd ever for a Reds game down at Great American Ballpark. Got to see the good guys come out on top. A couple of spectacular things did happen outside of Jay Bruce's mammoth 440-foot plus home run that he just absolutely drilled off the top of the batting eye straight away center field. So much for that weight loss affecting his power outage, I suppose. You didn't need to look too early into the game to find a couple of plays that made a difference in the game. In the first inning itself, the Reds did have the Marlins on the rope. Had the bases loaded with one out. Jay Bruce comes through with a sacrifice fly. The matchup, which I'm sure drew a lot of criticism, especially on the Twitterverse, was the following at bat with Ryan Ludwig. And many people were even questioning why Ludwig was even in the starting lineup. And it was stated during the telecast that Dusty was not in favor of Chris Heisey going against a finesse pitcher such as a Mark Burley versus a pitcher that throws a lot of fastballs. So we know Chris Heisey likes the fastballs, and he just thought Ryan Ludwig would do better in that situation. And Ludwig did drive in a run. So let's not make a whole lot of hay off of that. One thing that outside of the fantastic play by Scott Rolen on Gabby Sanchez and a great stretch and dig by Joey Votto there in the second inning, web gem quality defensive play by Scott Rolen. I mean, guy's only got 8 gold gloves. What difference does that make, right? In the top of the third inning, and if you watched the game on TV or either of the replays since then, Tom said something that just made me just roll my eyes and then chuckle. They were talking about the starting rotation, and he made a comment that they took, wondering if the handcuffs were off Mike Leake. I'm not going to expound on that. You know where it's potentially going with that deal. I just thought that ironic that such a statement would be made. It just struck me as kind of odd, especially knowing the circumstances of what happened last year. I don't want to call it a gaffe, because it definitely wasn't that. We saw two good plays by Joey Votto yesterday. Being on the back end of the spectacular play by Rolen, but he also saved Rolen once with an absolutely wonderful dig out of the dirt in the fourth inning, and just kind of set the tone. Not anything really, game wasn't really too high, too low, especially if you're a Miami Marlins fan. You got one whole hit that left the infield. Reds at 4 runs, 10 hits and an error. Marlins no runs, 3 hits and an error. And if I know it's just one game, but if you had any questions about Sean Marshall being the closer of this team, you may want to slightly reconsider that position, because he was absolutely nasty. And he's not going to blow guys away with 94, 95, 96. But some of the pitches he threw just had knees, a couple of curveballs, knees buckling, the swinging strike to end the game, just absolute filth. I think going forward, things with the bullpen might be all right. And I know that seeing Aroldis Chapman to some of us coming out of the bullpen as a reliever is kind of a downer. But he looked totally different yesterday versus the way he had the first two seasons. They talked about speeding up his deliveries, just totally, you know, getting in a quicker tempo, and it was obvious. I don't think he threw a bad pitch at all. I mean, he threw balls, but he didn't throw a bad pitch. The 90 mile an hour slider to get Jose Reyes was... All you can do is just sit there with your jaw hitting the floor after you see something like that. Key play of the game, though, came when the Marlins were batting in the sixth inning, runners on first and second, and one out. Johnny Cueto proceeds to whiff Hanley Ramirez, and Jose Reyes was trying to advance to third on a steal, stopped halfway in between. Ryan Hannigan guns the ball down to Rowland at third, back to BP, who subsequently then tags Reyes out in order to end the inning. That was the key play of the game. Marlins had an opening, had Hanley Ramirez at the plate. Don't forget, less than a handful of years ago, this guy finished in second place in the MVP voting to Albert Pujols. So the guy can definitely play ball. It may just take him a little bit longer this year to get his offense going, getting acclimated with third base as far as defense goes. His offense should come around. He was down all across the board with his offensive numbers last year. He battled injuries. There were internal issues with the Marlins themselves, but I think Hanley Ramirez will bounce back fine. Speaking of bounces, I want to go back to the Reds' second inning. And first at bat of the game, lefty finesse pitcher on the mound, and Mark Burley, who is a Gold Glove winning pitcher, by the way, and Drew Stubbs just pushes a butt past him. Now, Joe Luckup had a piece on Cincinnati.com that was excellent about how much bunting would really factor into Drew Stubbs' game. The fact of the matter is it's all defensively. He may not, you know, he could have maybe only 6-7 bunt hits this year, and Joel covers that in his piece, which is an excellent piece. If you haven't read it, I encourage you to go back there and read it. It's just putting the knowledge in the defense, just like, you know what, this guy may drop one down. And it's like Drew Stubbs has said, he doesn't want that to define his game because he's got a pretty good all-around game. If you think about it, he's got some pop. He's got absolutely blinding speed, covers tons of ground out there in center field. We know about the bugaboo he has at the plate. And that, in turn, knowing that there's the threat of him bunting, he may see a little more in the case of fastballs than he normally will. Then again, he could probably also see more breaking balls because just like we just can't let him square the bat on the ball. But that was a huge deal to see. Just to know that it is in his arsenal, he's willing to use it. First at bat of the season, no less. I found that pretty amazing. In getting to opening day, I spent... Last year on opening day, I spent a little time channel surfing. And when I was doing my channel surfing, I did it with one intent. I just wanted to see how much of a buzz opening day was gathering. And apparently it wasn't. About a week ago, we know baseball started its season with kind of a soft open with a two-game series played in Tokyo between the Mariners and the A's. And then on Wednesday night, there was opening night. There was just a single game of the Cardinals visiting the Marlins in their new stadium for opening night. There's just one game on those days. Some people will tell you the real opening day was yesterday, and even more, especially from Cincinnati, will tell you the real opening day is opening day in Cincinnati. You know, some weren't aware of the series in Japan. I guarantee a lot more people knew about opening night on Wednesday, and especially opening day yesterday, and we still have some teams that have yet to open their seasons, and they're doing so today. But on what was yesterday, in my opinion, the greatest day in sports, baseball was still being overshadowed. And it's something that I've sensed in the past few years. And I realize the popularity of baseball is not what it used to be. The sport that moves the needle is the NFL. And then with the Masters starting this week, you know, I get that the Masters started yesterday. We wanted to see what Tiger could do with his first round. You know, I get the deal about that audio that was released of former Saints defensive coordinator Greg Williams, and with some of the things that he said in that tape that could just create extremely mixed emotions. You know, I get that also on Wednesday night in Miami, the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Miami Heat were playing in what could be a potential finals preview. It was just one game. I know all of those are considered big, newsworthy sports items. I get that. But so is baseball's opening day. It's not an opening series. It's not opening night. It's opening day. You know, if you are a golf fan and you watch the Masters, one thing you always hear is the voice of Jim Nantz saying something along the lines that the Masters is a tradition like no other. Well, you know what? Opening day, Cincinnati, is the same way. The Masters may be like that in golf. For baseball, it's opening day in Cincinnati. So I did a little study of my own again this year. So at about 10 o'clock yesterday morning, I decided to flip on SportsCenter. And I kept flipping back between SportsCenter and First Take. And I would even peek in on Dan Patrick. Dan Patrick had Tim McCarver on during that hour. They talked some baseball, told him their picks. But as Dan Patrick calls now the place where he used to work at as the mothership, between SportsCenter and First Take, from 10 to 11, the only mention was that they were showing games today. Didn't talk about it, just a reminder, so to speak. It wasn't till almost, you know, I can get talking about the NBA to an extent, because it is still their season. But what I find, it's a farce, actually. It wasn't till almost 11:30 on either show that they even mentioned baseball and had any type of conversation about it. That's almost 3 hours of programming from the proclaimed worldwide leader in sports, maybe 5-6 minutes devoted to baseball's opening day. Not just a game, the whole day. Granted, they were showing there was going to be baseball tonight on at noon, et cetera, and they would get it cut. He covered it, et cetera, et cetera. But somehow, baseball is still getting thrown under the bus. Not one baseball analyst from the mothership was brought in from 10 to 11 to talk baseball. Not one. You know, kudos, though, to Greeny and Golic. They were at least at the MLB fan cave, and they did that 2 days. They were there. I'm just feeling that maybe that was enough coverage, having them there at the fan cave. Or that they were going to have an hour baseball tonight coming on at noon on another channel. It was about 11:27 on both shows when finally any talk of baseball finally emerged. You know, like I said, I don't take issue with an NBA. I don't even, you know, because they're still in their season. I don't take issue with showing some of the shots Tiger had to take during his first round at Augusta. I don't. They're in season. But you got to find the means within 3 hours of programming on two of your more popular shows to talk about baseball, don't you? I'll add one thing. The mothership employs some brilliant baseball minds. One of which is soon to be is Hall of Famer Barry Larkin. July 22nd, I believe, is the day if you want to make your plans for Cooperstown. To see these minds somewhat being restrained because they know they got such a short period of time in order to deliver their information is simply stifling and amazing. Something needs to be done on this front. Now, does it come from the network? Does it come from baseball? I don't know where it's got to come from, but something needs to be done. When you're hearing about a debate between Andrew Luck and RG3 on the opening day of baseball, something is inherently wrong with the way baseball is being covered. It needs to be done. I am now stepping down off my soapbox. A couple weeks ago, we did some polls to which you, the readers, would select our all NL Central team. And as I stated in the post where those polls were located in the past, we've done it among the staff of Blog Red Machine. We've even done so in cooperation with editors from some of the other, all the other National League Central sites. This year I wanted to do it different, and I wanted you to be able to have your say on who you thought was the best player at each position within the National League Central. We won't hesitate. We'll get right to it. Catcher for the All-NL Central team. Per your votes, Yadier Molina of the St. Louis Cardinals. First baseman, Joey Votto of the Cincinnati Reds. Second baseman, Brandon Phillips, Cincinnati Reds. Third base, David Freese, St. Louis Cardinals. And rounding out the infield at shortstop, Starlin Castro of the Chicago Cubs. There's a fair amount of hardware amongst those first three names, Molina, Votto, and Phillips. Phillips and Molina with the gold gloves. Votto's got an MVP. Phillips has a silver slugger now to add to his cabinet. And I'm not afraid to say this. In this time period, this generation that we're in now of baseball, I have not seen a better defensive catcher than Yadier Molina. I honestly haven't. Now, I've seen a better defensive catcher in my day, and that would be Johnny Bench. But for this time, for the time that we're in now, I don't think there's anybody better than Molina. But Molina is not better than Johnny Bench, Tony La Russa. He's not. Oh, one other thing. Seeing as how we're talking about Yadier Molina, and I am going to bring Brandon Phillips into play here. Brandon Phillips got a larger percentage of the vote. Just saying. To the outfield. Left field, Ryan Braun of the Milwaukee Brewers. Center field, Andrew McCutchen of the Pittsburgh Pirates. And right field, Jay Bruce of the Cincinnati Reds. That is the end of the position players. Now, looking over all the position players, infield, outfield, David Freese accumulated the smallest number of votes for a winner at his position. Not all over. We'll get into that when we get into the pitchers that come on down the line. I was shocked at how big the difference was between Ryan Braun and Matt Holliday. I figured Matt Holliday would get more votes than he did, especially with what occurred in the offseason and the issues surrounding Ryan Braun, and then the subsequent overturn, and now we're hearing more things that Braun has said, oh, there's more to this story, and, you know, I'm over and done with that part of it all. Let's look at the starting pitchers. The top five. Where's your starting rotation? Number one, Zach Greinke, the Milwaukee Brewers. Number two, Matt Latos, Cincinnati Reds. Number three, Yovani Gallardo of the Milwaukee Brewers. Number four, Adam Wainwright, the St. Louis Cardinals, and number 5, the Reds opening day winner, 7 scoreless with 3 hits yesterday, Johnny Cueto of the Cincinnati Reds. Your non-closing reliever, Sean Marshall of the Cincinnati Reds, and your closer, John Axford of the Milwaukee Brewers. I look at the starting staff and I was kind of taken aback with the number of votes Adam Wainwright got. And I guess that's supposedly because he missed all of last season. And I was kind of surprised that Chris Carpenter didn't make the top 5, but then of course he's hurt. So if you're going to hold that against Carpenter, wouldn't you think you kind of got to hold that against Wainwright? That's just me, and it's not that I don't think either of them are good pitchers. I really do. I think Adam Wainwright's been robbed of at least one Cy Young, but that's me. For the record, Chris Carpenter came in 6th. He was 3 votes behind Johnny Cueto. John Axford actually had the lowest percentage of any winner at his position, and that boggles my mind. It does on two fronts. Number one, I was of the opinion that John Axford was the best closer in the National League for 2011. No, folks from Atlanta may argue and say, oh, well, it was Craig Kimbrell. They had the same number of saves, and Axford only blew 2. Only blew 2 saves. One of those was on opening day. So for the other 161 games of the season, John Axford blew 1 game. That astounds me that he could only get 42% of the vote. Couldn't even get a majority. And here's the other thing. I can understand Joel Hanrahan giving him a run for his money. I can totally get that. I don't get Ryan Madsen getting the number of votes he got, especially considering more than half of his votes came after it was announced he was done for the year. I realized that when I saw that, and I knew there was going to be some sort of it to begin with, that it was going to become a popularity contest. And we get that in All-Star games, and maybe I'm venting for an unnecessary reason. I don't know. But I just thought, I actually thought it would be Axford and Hanrahan just duking it out like Rock'em Sock'em Robots. I guess it wasn't. Transparency purposes. Out of these 15, I was right on 14. Yes, I am patting myself on the back. It was the Wainwright. It was Adam Wainwright. I did not vote for Adam Wainwright. I didn't vote for Chris Carpenter. I voted for Matt Garza. And I know I'm going to get thrown under the bus for that, but you know what? I don't care because I think he's the Cubs' best pitcher, and I think he's the best fifth best pitcher in the division. I did give it some thought. You know, I was one. I discounted Wainwright because he missed last year, even though I know he's a great pitcher. And Carpenter was hurt, not knowing when he was going to return. I took that into consideration. I considered, maybe the likes of a Wandy Rodriguez, maybe even a Bud Norris. So if you look at the team as a whole, here's what we are left with. We are left with, ta-da, one Chicago Cub. Starlin Castro made the team. 6 Cincinnati Reds. Votto, Phillips, Bruce, Latos, Cueto, and Marshall. 4 Milwaukee Brewers. Braun, Greinke, Gallardo, and Axford. 1 Pirate, Andrew McCutchen, and 3 Cards. Molina, Fries, and Wainwright. No Houston Astros were selected. The highest percentage of the vote, Joseph Daniel Votto. 91%. 91% of the votes for first baseman he received. We touched upon John Axford only receiving 42%. However, the closest battle was at third base between David Fries and Aramis Ramirez. Another thing that I want to touch on real quick before we wrap things up. Normally, I like to try to go at least a half hour, maybe a little more, but I'm still reveling in the excitement from yesterday's opening day win. Pretty soon, hopefully over the weekend, on our Reds Extras page, I'm going to have all the promotions or the nights that involve giveaways that are going to be taking place down at Great American Ballpark. Just go to the blogredmachine.com homepage, click on Red Extras. Right now, all we got up there is a link to the podcast. I will have that up there. Tomorrow or Sunday, they will be having a giveaway courtesy of Meyer, a commemorative Easter tin for, I believe it's the first 7,000 or 8,000 kids 14 and under. They will get that. The Reds have plenty coming up this season. Most notably, Sean Casey bobblehead. I wish when they construct that bobblehead, they had had a Skyline in his hand, because that just would have been extremely appropriate. My name's Steve Engblom, senior editor of Blog Red Machine. Hope you enjoyed this little half-hour session we had. We appreciate your listening and your readership. Have a great holiday, and we thank you.